be moderating this panel. We have a great panel here, I would say. And I'm going to ask everyone to start off by introducing themselves. And if you can think of it, the most interesting challenge you've ever had in the midst of either advocating for a graphic novel collection or an official challenge of some sort, whatever you think. And, you know, we don't need, like, a full story, but something that kind of provoked a question you didn't expect. I will say I'm the team librarian at the Brooklyn Public Library. That's just outside of Boston. And I've been working with Comics and Libraries since 99, pretty much. I think the most unexpected challenge I ever had, and it should have been expected, I just didn't think it through, was when we started our Japanese manga and anime club in my town that I worked in, which had a large Chinese population. And I had a parent come in and say, what do you do when the Japanese misrepresent themselves in history? How would you deal with that in the club? How would you explain this to the kids? And I kind of went, oh, I should have thought of that. and we had a good discussion, and he left satisfied because I took his question seriously. So that was the kind of most, I should have expected it, but didn't quite think it through. And then when it came up, I was like, oh yes, we should discuss. So.
I'm Gene Ambaum. I write on Shell, but I used to be a YA librarian, and I worked in staff training for a while. One day I walked into my boss's office, and there was a copy of Bitchy Bitch. Who wrote that? I can't remember her name.
Roberta Gregory,
who's local to Seattle, and this is just outside of Seattle. And some parent had complained about Bitchy Bitch being in our adult collection. And my boss was like, I think that's just going to end up in the garbage can. And I said, there's no effing way you can put that in the garbage can. Like, that's local, basically. It's very local. It's really well respected. It's the omnibus edition. Like, you can't do that. And I went head to head with my boss for that. And it didn't end up in the garbage can. I waited until she was out of her office, and I just took the slip out of it, and I stuck it back on the shelf. and I know about a strange challenge. I can't really say where this took place, but I know that a parent came in and complained about Lone Wolf and Cub. Their kid had picked it up, and I know the librarian who was there, because the librarian was like, no, you know, you shouldn't. Maybe you want to look at that with your kid. And the parent was like, no, my kid reads a lot of comics. And they took it home and came back and complained, and they complained so much that I know they were paid off by the library system, like kind of unofficially, to settle what would have been a big lawsuit, a big public lawsuit about that. So very disappointing and strange thing, and I often wonder how much of that happens that we don't know about.
Hey everybody, I'm Charles Brownstein. I'm the executive director of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, and we're a nonprofit organization in the United States protecting the freedom to read. Probably the most unexpected challenge that's crossed my desk in the last decade was when I received a very distraught phone call that a parent was trying to remove bone from the public library in Minnesota. And the reason they were trying to remove Bone, Jeff Smith's classic of adventure and friendship and, you know, learning through working with each other about how to get through life, you know, the smart way, is because there was a sequence early in the book where adults were in a tavern smoking cigars and drinking ale, which I suppose is anathema to the values of Minnesota. And so the fund, of course, you know, worked to gather the resources about Jeff and his bona fides and the importance of the book, you know, to address the challenge. And so we are kind of there as a late line of defense. You know, you should have the conversation first. You should hear and, you know, really have that dialogue. But when dialogue is not enough, we gather resources and assist to help keep graphic novels circulating.
Thanks, Charles. Hi, everybody. My name is Diana Molaszewski, and I'm a teacher librarian at Agnes MacPhail Public School in the Toronto District School Board here in Toronto. And I've been pretty lucky that in my own school library, there has not been I don't have any great stories like Gene and Charles do. I have related stories. I think one of the things that happened yesterday was a parent said, my child just takes out only comics. He only takes out comics. And maybe later I'll talk about how we deal with that.
Well, my name is Rebecca Scoble, and I was a library coordinator for The Beguiling for 5 years, and I've also been a freelancer in the manga industry for about 10. So I have a little perspective on what I know can be kind of a problematic genre for a lot of people. And the most interesting story we ever had was when a librarian had a problem with Wonder Woman getting in a fight, which kind of blindsided all of us, because, you know, as comics people, that's just what Wonder Woman does. But having to see that from a different perspective, how seeing a woman, even a powerful woman with magic powers who is strong and tough, but seeing her get punched and be losing for a portion of that being a problem for some people was sort of a very different perspective for us.
Hi. My name is Eva Volan. I'm the supervising children's librarian for the Alameda Free Library in Alameda, California. And once upon a time, I worked for the Stockton Public Library, which is in the Central Valley of California. And we had a copy of A Child's Life by Phoebe Glockner, misshelved in the teen section. A young teen checked it out, took it home. His mother was shocked to find what was inside, photocopied specific pages, took it, and instead of bringing it to the library, took it to her minister. And in a very conservative area of California, like the Central Valley, things did not go well after that. And we ended up having to defend having graphic novels in the library at all. It was very long, it was very ugly, but the end result was we ended up having to review every single graphic novel title we had in the collection, which meant that for about 3 months, I got to, on company time, sit in the staff room and read comics for about 4 to 5 hours every day. It was the best challenge of my life.
I think that's always true with challenge books, of course, is they go out more and they get requested more as soon as the challenge happens. The weird plus side to that sort of thing. Well, today we did want to talk about, obviously, the idea of official challenges, but also the very kind of, I think, everyday challenge of defending graphic novels as a collection to have, that it is something you should have in the library, that it's real reading, that it's, you know, and there's no kind of lower scale for it, that it's something that's just as valid as any other format that you collect. So that's something I did want to talk a little bit about. One of the things I wanted to ask everybody is, there are a lot of stereotypes about comics that we've all heard over the years, that we've all run into over the years. I always think that I've hit the point where I no longer have to explain something. You know, I'll be like, oh, I don't have to explain about how comics are for adults too anymore, or whatever. And then that isn't ever true. Like, I always get sad when I realize, no, I have to explain it again. Now, I don't mind, because I'm an advocate and an educator in general, so I don't mind being the person that's like, actually. So I wanted to ask you guys what you think the stereotypes are that are still there, that you still have to work through and deal with kind of on a daily basis, and how you do that. And then which ones you think might have fallen behind at this point that we don't have to defend as much?
Yeah, they're okay from Wicker Kids, because Wicker Kids need to make real books.
So they're for the reluctant readers.
Yeah.
That idea. How would you guys defend against that idea?
That they're for reluctant readers?
No, not that they're only really, like, academic kids shouldn't have them, because they need to have real books.
Does anybody want to do this?
I mean, I can say what I
We can tag.
Yeah, exactly. Go for it, or I'll talk all
Okay, time. I'll just say quickly. I mean, when I run into that question, usually that involves a conversation about just what it takes to read a comic. I usually ask whoever it is whether they've ever read one, whether they know kind of how it functions. And I think the other thing, of course, is that I point out that all the kids that I have in my teen room, all of them read comics, and the ones who are the ones who read the most are the ones who read the most everything. So it's not about what it is. And I think the other big thing I always say is that, and this is what Dave and Raina were just talking about too, comics are never a replacement for other kinds of books. It's just another way to get a story. So you should never think of it as a replacement or as something that somehow, it's not
a stepping stone.
Yeah,
that's
not
a really
stone,
annoying misconception.
Yeah.
They'll read comics, and then when they're ready, then they'll graduate
and
to
not like,
better
it's not like,
books.
Series books. There's a sense of series books that you get like stuck on Nancy Drew, and you read all Nancy Drew, and then you realize they're all kind of the same, and then you stop. And that's fine. And there are comics like that, just like there are books like that. But that's not the purpose of graphic novels. Right.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend who, a librarian, reference librarian, reads everything, reads like crazy, and she can't read comics. Like, she can't parse, she can't watch foreign films either with subtitles. She can't parse text and images at the same time. Mm. It's very strange. Her mind just doesn't work like that. And so I always tell people about her too.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, this is a different thing, right? Like it's not that same thing. So.
Well, and my answer tends to answer both the comics are only for reluctant readers and the comics couldn't possibly be for advanced readers. By saying that most kids who are reading comics are reading 1 to 2 grade levels above where they're being tested as readers. And so, because the pictures are there to help them decode the words. So you do have that advantage for kids who are struggling with written text, because the pictures are there to help them. But you also have kids who are advanced readers who are reading more challenging books because the pictures are there to help them decode the words and understand the concept of what the author is trying to convey. While yes, super for reluctant readers, they're also fantastic for advanced readers and readers who are trying to challenge themselves.
Well, so I know one of the big buzzwords in education right now is differentiated learning, right? I see some nodding in the audience. Comics are the ultimate differentiated learning text, because depending on who's reading it and at what level they're at, they pick up so many different things, from a literal, oh, this is what the story's about, to some really sophisticated nuances and inferences that you'll only get from making that combination of text and visual. Mm-hmm.
And
I actually wrote this story for Diana's magazine.
Yes.
But Charles is reminding me that I told it in Seattle. Like my daughter is 10, and she's in fifth grade at a bilingual school, and she reads fantastically. She probably reads better than me. I think her comprehension is way above mine. I mean that seriously. And I went in for the teacher conference at the beginning of the year, and her teacher somehow, I don't remember anything else she said, because at one point she said, oh, comics are just candy. They're for dessert. Like, the kids need to read real books. And I was so mad, I don't remember anything else she said. My wife was holding me back a little bit. And I went up to her afterwards, and I said, you know, I want to talk to you about that comment you made. It really bothered me. And part of the reason it bothered me is I'm a librarian, but I also write comics. And I said, you know, I don't think that's true. I think comics are real books. And she goes, well, who's your daughter? What's her name? And I told her. And she looked at my daughter's reading scores, and she was like, oh, don't worry, your daughter can read anything she wants. She doesn't have any problems. And I was like, she doesn't have any problems because she reads comics. Because we read picture books. We read any book that appeals to us, right? At any lexical level, like, which I don't believe in at all, by the way. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about that. I think that is just complete BS. I can't stand that books are leveled by reading level. I think kids will read anything. They'll pull themselves through anything that they really are interested in. But then the teacher actually had me in to help teach a little comics unit, right? And then I brought in some blank pages, and I talked to the kids about comics, and they disagreed with every theory I had about how comics worked and all word balloons. They were just shouting me down. It was perfect. And then I said, well, here, then show me how to do it better. And I passed out just these pages that had, some of them had panels on them, some had no panels. I said, just make comics. And they all started making comics. And the teacher was like, tell them what to do. And I'm like, I don't need to. They're all just making comics. They're all writing. They're all sharing everything with each other. I don't need to help anybody. See how awesome this is? And she wanted me to give them like an assignment. And I was like, all you have to do is say go. Isn't that fun? Yeah. So, anyway.
And I will say that one other argument I just remembered that I often use with that idea is that we live in a world that is no longer text only. I mean, there's video games, there's the internet, there's television, there's film. We process the world in images and pictures anyway. So it should not be so strange that kids need to learn how to parse that and how to do it well and to do it in an advanced way that lets them understand everything that they're seeing in the world. So it's the kind of thing that I frequently bring that up as an idea, that, you know, it's no longer just about prose text literacy. It's about everything else, and it's about combining all of that to make sense of the world. So that's the other argument I usually have.
Can I just comment on
sure, this? I mean, we should, I don't want to get too much into discussion, but go ahead.
No, yeah. You guys made me think of a couple of things, and the first thing that I thought of was that often my academic kids have trouble with social interactions because they don't focus on that. So my lower-level kids who are reluctant readers are much better at social interaction. They understand comics better. That means the academic kids kind of need comics because they need more practice in reading people. And then what you just said about social media, studies have shown that kids are becoming less able to read social cues. And so they need some time to kind of look at people and expressions and think about kind of what this means as like a direct teaching tool, because otherwise we're going to lose all the ability to kind of actually speak to each other.
Well, I think that's one reason why comics are very often used with kids who are high-level autistic.
Right.
Is because the cues are there. The cues are all there in the pictures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will say that, you know, as a high school-aged little geek, you know, comics are a social group for, like, they create your social group for a lot of those kids who are high academic learners but might have trouble connecting with other kids, you know. Having the comics club or the manga club or the anime club ends up being your social group, ends up being the thing that gives you that social interaction. And, you know, that might not be the thing that makes your, like, makes the parents happy that you can explain that easily, but it's really, really important for those kids.
One question I had for everyone is, what resources do you use when you have to, say, either present something to someone or kind of convince them of the validity of the form? I was just almost as a practical kind of, where do you send them, what do you tell them to look at, what do you give them, what do you say to them? For example, this article is one I give to almost everybody. It's by Hollis Rediger, it's from the Horn Book, and it's actually very short, it's only 4 pages long, and it's just about how to read comics. But it's very much from a novice point of view and from the idea that so many adults really just don't understand what it takes to read a comic and what actually goes into it. So this, like, if I could make them all read understanding comics, I would, but that's too long for most people to just hand out. Mm-hmm. Whereas this article I can just hand out every single time. So there are certain resources I go back and forth to and kind of figure out, to the point that I keep debating whether I should just print out a bunch of copies of this so I can hand it out at the reference desk and be like, here, this is what the deal is. And I think that's something I'm always looking for, is kind of the easier way to give people information, because I think part of our goal is always to educate people about the format. That's always the first step to preventing challenges, is to educate people. So, anybody?
Sometimes the students are your best advocates. And another piece are things like awards. I was really excited to hear about Dave's initiative about the awards. In Ontario, we have something called the Silver Birch Awards. This year, one of the Express nominees is a graphic novel, Dalen and Goal, Adventures in Port Angus. And one of my teachers said to me, you know, I don't really like those comic things. I don't really read them. But, you know, Alex, one of her students, forced me to read it. He said, you have to read this. And I really liked it. It's the first comic. And so you, as an adult, can talk all you want and give your resources, and there's some great resources, but when you have something powerful like that, that's where the change happens.
Oh, sorry. I will say that the YALSA lists, although as a bookseller, we probably agree with maybe half of them. Some of you look at the list like, you know, why is this book on here? Confused. I will say they tend to push it. They will put books on there that would be a tough sell for a lot of high schools. So if you can say this is an award-winning, the librarians are talking about this book and they're saying this is a great book for your kids, you know, you can get a little more adult content in there, particularly sort of, you know, plot-centric adult content that's, you know, vital to the plot and dealing with more adult themes and that sort of thing, if you can use that as a way to defend it.
It legitimizes it a bit, doesn't it?
Yes, definitely.
I went into a library that didn't have a lot of comics and graphic novels, and they gave me a bunch of money. Like, I kind of begged for it. And wherever I was hired, they gave me a bunch of money to buy a bunch of comics. And a lot of the staff was really pissed. Like, they just didn't understand why I was not only throwing away other books to make room for the comics, but why I got to spend thousands of dollars on comics, which I obviously loved, so it looked like a buy for me, and I was like, no, I'm buying things that I don't like, too, look. But it was interesting, and like, I made it kind of my mission over the course of a couple of years to find a graphic novel that everybody liked, especially the people who were most vocally against what I was doing, and give it to them. And for one person, it was Blankets. For another person, it was Bone. You know what I mean? And I would talk comics a lot in the back room to the point where I think everybody thought that's all I read. And I was like, no, I read other things, too. But like, one guy, he just kept hammering me, and he just hated it. And he was an older guy. He was in charge of operations. And every time the comics came in and the staff was checking them, he'd just be like, oh, more comics. And I gave him, he was a big opera buff, and I didn't know what to give him. He had read comics as a kid, you know, back in the 40s or 50s. And no, it's not a joke. I mean, like, I'm not joking. Just how old he was. Really great guy. But he finally, I gave him P. Craig Russell's adaptations of Wagner's The Ring. And he read them, and he went home, and he came back, and he was like, you got me. That was it. I haven't heard another word from anybody in that library. You know? So, it can happen. It just took a while. So.
Yeah. I think that's a good point towards reader's advisory to graphic novels, which I always find people, it's like anything. People think, oh, I have to read the award winners or the most notable titles. So, so many people try to read Watchmen. And I'm always just like, no. Like, I know that Watchmen is a great thing in and of itself, but it is not for a novice graphic novel reader. It is way too dense and refers to all these things they're never going to understand. And it's such a bad start for a lot of people that they get completely turned off the whole format. So there's a lot of, I think all of us librarians are always like, no, I can get you a better book that will actually convince you this format is okay.
You know? You shouldn't go, if you don't like this, you're crap.
Yes.
I just want to briefly point out some resources that we created in response to just, listening to the feedback of the community. And so at cbldf.org, we actually have a fairly extensive banned comics section that has a catalog of case studies of graphic novels that have been challenged over the years with regard to the titles, where the challenge happened, what the challenge was about, and how the resolution occurred. We also have a, unfortunately, outdated graphic novel suggestions for librarians on there that was made in 2002. There's still some good information, but the world has changed. It was flat then. It's round now. We're working on revising it. And over the summer, we'll be publishing some new tools, including a publication by Jennifer Holm, who does Baby Mouse, called Raising a Reader, which is designed for parents about the value of comics and graphic novels. We're going to be making that as, I think it's going to format out at about 8 or 12 pages as a printable that's easy to share about the format. And then this fall, Dark Horse is publishing a book called Graphic Novels Suggestions, Graphic Novels Introduction, Manga Introduction Challenges and Best Practices. And this is an excellent overview of the category, the five major genre audience categories, and challenges within there. So not trying to make an infomercial, but just pointing out that the fund is here as a nonprofit. We don't want to sell you anything. We want to hear your feedback about what it is that you need. And so these are the most recent responses to what we've been asked to create.
And one of the things that I think is important, goes to what you were saying too, is the idea of internal resistance. I think in my experience, that's actually where I hit the most resistance, is my own staff. They kind of, there's this, still a sense of, well, Robin does her comics thing, that's good for the library, but none of them are particularly convinced that this is really something we should be doing in a serious manner. Now, this is less and less true over the years, but when I first started, it was very much like a special project, sort of, oh, okay, fine. But it was, and I had a couple of actively kind of disgusted people at our desks who were appalled by comics that would come through that were either adult or just to them seemed somehow objectionable. I mean, that's much harder to deal with because most of the time nobody talks about it. It's not an official challenge.
Just amongst themselves and whispers.
Yes, there's a lot of gossiping and discussing and, looking at a book as it goes through in the bins, being like, oh. And it's just difficult.
Yeah. And pursuant to that, I mean, we seem to be getting 201 challenges now. Mm-hmm. Like the 101,
what does that mean, Charles?
Well, the 101 level challenge that we've been discussing so far today is, are comics valid? The 201 is, it's politically incorrect to say to the comics advocate that comics are not valid or I have a bias against comics. I'll keep that to myself. And then the other 201 level challenge, and you saw it with, say, Neonomicon last fall in South Carolina, a misconception about what comics are. So an acceptance that comics belong on the library shelves, but a misconception about where the content goes that leads to challenges. The case with Neonomicon was that a parent of a young teen allowed her her child access to check out books in the adult collection, and she did a flip test on this Alan Moore book, which should not be read by anybody. let alone a 14-year-old girl, but goes, okay, well, this is a comic, this is a murder mystery, this is fine, and then was very upset at the librarian for how dare you have this Cthulhu comic that has all of these unpleasant elements of it. But again, it stemmed from, I thought I understand what comics are. So between the, you know, I don't agree with it, but I'm going to ignore it because it's going to be politically incorrect with the advocate, or I think I understand it, but I really don't, seems to be the level of challenges that we're starting to see come up
more. Right. And we have, in the public library, we have a little more leeway because we're going to have a children's department, a teen department, an adult department. Where in a school library, you don't have as much, you don't have as many places to put things. Or you're speaking, or you're buying books for a specific community that has specific wants and needs. So it's not as easy to be able to just move it from one department to another. If you get it, you flip it, and you're like, you know, this is probably going to be, we still want the book, but it's going to be better to keep it in the adult section as opposed to the teen section or what have you. Where was I going with this? There are ways to make space. The whole less space argument I tend to have take issue with sometimes, as opposed to what are you keeping, as opposed to these. Mm-hmm. But it is hard when you've got a limited budget, a specific audience, and a demand for books that you kind of maybe think are going to be problematic. And how do you make those decisions? And how do you and are you prepared for what flack you may get? And not every administration is going to say, we have this challenge, let's give CBLDF a call. You're often going to have the principal who says, A, get rid of the book, or B, you're fired. Mm-hmm. And that's a really fine roof ledge to be walking on.
I had the experience with my director that I didn't know at the time. The only time I've ever had an official challenge to a graphic novel was in our adult collection. Howard Chaykin one? Anyway, but it was just a typical sort of, and I was like, meh, you know, like, it's like everything else we have in the adult collection. Like, to me, it was not a big deal. It's not the best comic in the world, but it wasn't the worst. But he kind of sent me an email in the way of my director, who just kind of tells you a very brief amount, and then you end up hearing an earful later about what that actually meant. but he just said, oh, can you, like, you know, someone has challenged this, can you send me stuff about why you bought it and what it is? So I wrote up a very official sort of response, and reviews, and reputation, and all the things one does. And then I talked to him the next week, and it turns out this is a guy who challenges something every year, so he knows him. And he's like, so yeah, we, you know, that's fine, I wrote him a letter, it's good. And I was like, thanks, Jack. So it was interesting, because it was like weirdly practice for being ready for when the challenge happens, but it was also just, it was so clear that he was like, oh no, that's that guy, he always does that. You know, like, it's okay. But he doesn't always challenge comics, he just challenges something.
So. Can we come back to your earlier comment that led to that thread, which was about the internal whispers, rumors, you know, discomfort. The thing is, teacher librarians and librarians are supposed to be the ones that are upholding intellectual freedom. And it's really tricky when you have somebody who, for whatever reasons, for not, as Charles said, not understanding comics, or their own personal, you know, lens or way of seeing things, will take things out because they're supposed to be the ones that are upholding it. And that leads me to a short story. I was at a different school library, family of schools, where I was talking about comics, so I was a guest. And somebody else was very proud to talk about their comic club. And their comic club involved taking black markers, and they got comics, and she and the kids would go through and black out. I know, I'm sorry, Andrew. I
sit down before I Andrew Woodrow Butcher falls on the floor and faints, straight teacup. And she was so proud of this. This was the mind-blowing part. Words, you know, images, visuals that they didn't like. And some of my own students are here today, and we're talking right now in a unit about censoring, banning, and challenging books. And that blew their minds.
Yeah.
That,
thanks for helping.
So, yes.
See, that's
from our school, Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility.
I think that's such a weird intellectual freedom question, too. Like, can people do that? You know, we don't ever talk. No. but it's weirdly like collaging to me. Like I want to see what your take is on this. Like, what do you actually find objectionable? It would be so helpful if one of the censors would just go out and buy the book and bring it in and go, these parts. This is where I'm at. I'd be like, wow, you are even more wacko than I thought. Like, that's completely batshit, right?
Well, one thing, sorry, I'll get to you in just a sec. One thing I was thinking too, that you were talking about, like the newer level of kind of challenges that come in. One thing I've noticed that is still a problem in my library is, again, people think of comics as my domain, and obviously I'm in the building, you know, they are going to call me and be like, someone's looking for comics, come down to the desk. But at the same time, if I want my staff to feel confident in recommending comics or think to recommend comics, you know, if there's some sort of question that comes up and there's a graphic novel or a memoir or something that would work for them, I mean, I do represent it in the sense of, you know, you do what you can to advocate kind of stealthily. So, you know, I add them to displays, or I put them up on shelves, or I put them as a staff favorite, or whatever. But I feel like you do feel like you're the only one that does that. And after a while, it gets tiresome to realize that still the entire staff never thinks of the collection. They don't think of it as a place to send people or to give them information. And I always remember there was one time, it's like a 20-year-old guy who came in who really just was not a reader. He was not particularly proficient in English in terms of grammar, and had obviously never had a really good experience reading a book, and he had to read something about history, and he was just very, like, you know, dragging his feet, kind of not happy at all. And I finally found him a bunch of our nonfiction history comics. One of them was Larry Donick, which of course are classic. And the great thing is I kind of gave him a whole stack, and there was also included prose nonfiction and a bunch of different things that he might. And I left him there, and then came back 10 minutes later, and he's sitting there laughing his butt off at the Larry Gonick. And I was like, yes! Because that's the kind of thing that, you know, I would think to recommend, but I don't, it's much harder to get the staff to do that. I'm sorry, but I'll go to you in a minute.
Yeah? I have actually three challenges. They're all completely different, so you can answer any or all of them. Number one, we have a kids' comics collection, a teen comics collection. How do I convince my adult librarian to pull out the adult comics into their own section? Number two, this is what a patron says to me, and I would like some help with a response. I read one comic, and I don't like it. I just don't think it's my thing. And then number three, academic studies on comics, you know, in terms of, you know, not just someone who wrote an article about how they think comics are good, but, you know, actual studies where can I find information like that. So, go!
Well, your third question is something that at the Beguiling we've done a lot. We've put together collections for college courses, we've put together collections for, you know, people who are really looking at this from an academic standpoint, either as, you know, looking at comics in general as an art form, or as sort of using comics for certain topics, and you know, gender studies sometimes, or sexuality studies. There's a lot of really good stuff for that. I mean, you know, obviously for us, we have to have a staff member who's really on board, and I mean, I think just knowing the entire spectrum of books that you're going to be using really, really well is the way that you can defend that, you know, and that's something that we can help people with, because, you know, part of what we do is go through all these books and figure out how we're going to defend every single one of them, how we're going to talk about every single one of them as an individual story. And I think that also in terms of, you know, advocating for comics, just, you know, being able to go beyond Mouse and Persepolis and look at the things that are coming out now in the sort of the new round of things that are kind of hot and interesting in the comics industry, knowing, you know, just how to, like what interesting things there are in these different comics and being able to talk about them, even if you haven't read them all, sort of having your little sales blurb almost about, you know, being able to talk about why this is important is sort of a really good way to you know, actually make these things happen. And I think that, you know, if you can't explain that, you're not going to be able to get anybody else on your side.
In the ProQuest education databases, searching for comics or graphic novels, or in the reading section, like a lot of the reading researchers are loving that. When I was doing some work for my master's of education program, University of Alberta has a fantastic course called comics and graphic novels in school and public libraries. Gail DeVos is the professor who teaches it, and she's a great resource for that. If that's what you're, that academic stuff that has a look, research, real research has shown that this is good. So Gail DeVos is a good contact name as well as, but there's a whole bunch of others, right?
There's a lot of articles and books that I can think of. I was thinking there's things like Katie Monin's book, which is about teaching with comics, but it has a lot of statistics within the book.
The OSSTF magazine occasionally will run an article on it The OSSTF magazine?
Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation?
I'm wrong. It's the OCT magazine. The
Ontario College of Teachers.
Sure. Right. And I mean, that's the thing, is when I search at this point, I can find, it's kind of like what you're saying, once you start searching in the database, you can find a lot of comic statistics sort of articles that will give you a backup. I mean, there's the classic things like Stephen Krashen and The Power of Reading and, you know, things like that. I mean, the one I always whip out off the top of my head, which I think you and I both do, is the whole, you know, when you're reading a comic, you're reading at a higher level than you read in prose for kids. And whenever I tell a parent that, they're like, well, what? And I'm like, well, think about it. Vocabulary is more specific. It's more complicated because you only have a few words to use. And they all go, oh. So, you know, so that's like the first one I drag out. I was thinking about the whole idea of I've read one comic and I don't, you know, that's just not my thing. I definitely have people who've done that. I have a friend too, like you do, that basically can't parse images. So comics don't work for her unless she likes the writing. And she can read an entire comic and have no opinion on the art. So she's always like, this was good, but I found the art distracting. Like, it doesn't work for her. Strangely enough, she's a big DC Comics person. But I think she likes the writers.
There's a relationship there.
Yeah. The one thing I always say, and this always gets me a look whenever someone says, you know, I'd like advice on a graphic novel to read, I say, well, what else do you like to read? And they all just look at me like, what? I'm like, I don't just have like five that I recommend to everybody. I'm like, do you like mysteries? Do you like science fiction? Do you like memoirs? Do you like biographies? Do you like? And none of them kind of get that they're it's a format,
not a genre.
So there's a lot of kind of doing just that, just saying, okay, well, which one did you read? Is that something you would normally like? If you read that in prose, would you like that story?
Was your first one The Watchmen?
Yes.
But who is that person? Is that somebody in your way, or is it somebody who's just like a patron who came in and they're like?
No, I mean, just I'm all ready for like the whole, you know, validity of comics arguments. But when someone's like, I guess what I feel like is if somebody said to me, I've never watched a movie in my life, I'd be like, you should watch a movie. But I have people say I've never read a comic. It's just not my thing. But you know.
But to me, it's like those people who are like, well, I don't watch television because I don't have a TV in my house. And I'm like, there's really nothing I can do to you. You're not going to watch Project Runway. Just, you know, I dig that. I watch it with my kid, but it's like, it's not for you.
No, but these are people who are philosophically opposed. These are people who just don't think that they would be interested in them.
But to me, it's like our job is to connect people with the parts of the collection they want to connect with, right? I mean, if it's somebody who's in my way or in my kid's way, and I have a real stake in that, like, I'll go out of my way to try to convince them. But if it's not, I just don't care anymore. I'm like your world is very small.
But you seem happy there.
I can't change the kind of person you are. I'm here if you ever want to talk about it again.
Yeah.
Like, I'll give it my best shot. But like, obviously, like, you don't care enough. Like, let's get you something, get you out of my way, so I can talk to somebody worth talking to.
But,
you
know? But let's dig into this point a little bit, though, because one of the things that I think we are dealing with is, you know, the next phase of where comics is going is that we're moving beyond the novelty. And I think that to a certain extent, the last decade or more has been about comics as a novelty, comics as this new and novel thing that is entering the reading sphere that people are curious about. And so it's really not like I don't watch TV because I'm smarter than that, because everybody accepts that TV is just a baseline, and either you participate or you don't. You know, this is a... I've never ridden an exercise bike before. You know, I've never gone to the gym before. And some people are gym people and some people aren't. So, you know, that's a bad example. But it really is about, this isn't a novelty. This is a field of communication that speaks, you know, in a novel fashion, but that also is part of the entire reading culture, the entire intellectual freedom culture. And I think that's really a lot of the context that we are challenged with in providing for the next decade.
Well, and I think, like, I do definitely get what you're saying about about that, but a part of me also feels like, you know, I might say film is not my thing, but I feel like I still should be exposed to it. I still should have a sense for what it is, so that I might be able to say, well, yeah, I write a couple of comics and I like them, but, you know, go ahead. It's definitely, you know, worth your time kind of a thing. I feel like the more people are exposed, you know, the more it actually becomes a normal part of culture. And I guess sometimes I get stuck because I'm already with those, you know, I'm ready to defend comics kind of responses, but then if someone's like, I just don't like it.
Just flash it. Just go.
Remember that, buddy?
And I do think having a handful of titles in your pocket that don't fall into the normal genres, you know, books that don't have a fantasy or science fiction element that are, you know, sort of slice of life, but, you know, books that are really heavy, literary, respected books, but also books that are just sort of dealing with day-to-day things on sort of an adult level, also on the kids level, books that star girls and boys that are like that, you know, those adaptations of classic books and Shakespeare, although some of them are pretty crappy, there are some pretty good ones, and they can be a really good way to get people into it who are resistant, you know, things like that, just being able to find the right book for the right person, and if somebody's, like, totally uninterested in superheroes and fantasy and science fiction, obviously that's a huge section of comics that they are not going to like, but there's a huge other section of comics that they could really love.
Mm-hmm. Well, even, like, my friend who's saying who has issues kind of parsing images, she's the one who's most excited about Relish by Lucy Nicely, because she's just, like, she's a giant foodie, so she's like, that book looks great, can you get me that? And I'm like, yes, I can. But, you know, it's just one of those things of it's very specific. And I even just met a cousin of hers who's French, who's a Vinter. So he's actually writing a graphic novel about doing that. And he's since he's in France, of course, there's like a whole other culture over there. And he's got an artist and everything lined up. But as soon as I met him, he's like, do you know Drops of God? Which is the manga about being a civilian.
Have you seen the initiative?
No.
It just came out from NBM. It's a Vintner and a graphic novelist. They change places.
Anyway, but yeah, so it was one of those things where, you know, people don't think there is something for them, and obviously this guy, he's always been an advocate for comics because he's in France, and that's just a whole other thing.
But sorry, to your first challenge, do you mind if we move on?
Go ahead.
The first challenge, it's hard. It's hard. Have a seat, make yourself comfortable, because some people move at the speed of stone. If numbers talk to them, have them look at circulation numbers. There is nothing that circulates better in my children's collection than the graphic novels, to the point where I've got 6 full bays of nothing but graphic novels, and it's about 7 shelves deep, and it's always empty. You know, I own that many comics, and they're always checked out. And for them, and those 8th graders in 5 years are going to be going to the adult collection looking for books to read. Sometimes it takes going a step up and saying, all right, the adult services person doesn't see this, maybe the director would. And sometimes it's hard because you're crossing boundaries, because I'm a children's librarian and I really have no control over what happens in adult services. I wish I did. Things would be better if I was in control of everything. But it's not my department. And no matter how wrong-headed they may be, if they don't care enough, if I can't care more, than admin does. It doesn't do me any good to care more than admin does, unless I can convince admin to care as much as I do. And sometimes you just, in the library world, literally you have to wait for somebody to die. it's very frustrating, but sometimes, you know, it becomes obvious.
And I will say,
the numbers don't lie.
I was sharing my little story earlier. This was way back, I think, in 2000, when we had graphic novels in the teen collection in my library. We only had a few in comics, although the children's librarian was very on board with that. But there was very much resistance to an adult section. People couldn't really decide whether that was important or worthwhile. And they gave me enough money to get 10 graphic novels for the adult collection. So I did, and they only went to our branch. They did not go to the main library. This was this tiny little, it's a house, actually, that was a branch. And the people that mainly went to this branch were the kids from the Waldorf school behind us, and seniors. That was like the people who went. So I put out, and I wish I could remember what I actually bought, but some of it was the classic sort of Dark Knight Returns Watchmen, some of it was like Mouse, some of it, I don't even remember it. But I only had those 10, and I stuck them on top of the fiction section in their little like bookends, and they circulated like crazy. And all the seniors came in and were like, comics, excellent. You know, and I was like, and they all had like a blast because they remembered it from growing up. And they were just like, this is so nice that you guys have this now, blah, blah, blah. And you know, so it like immediately convinced the rest of the library that just with those 10 books, that level of circulation, thus we started to build the collection at the main library. Then I convinced them to put them right across from the reference desk and not hide them in the corner. And that also...
Yeah, you can't hide them. That's the thing.
That's the hardest
thing. Putting them in 741.5 is the same as burying them in a hole.
Yeah. And even if you just have a cart, I mean, just like put them on a cart.
That's why the numbers thing can be tough because people don't know where they are buried and not buried.
Yeah, that's when you throw them on a display.
You could say, let me do an experiment. Just let me take so many, stick them on a shelf, and then see what happens.
And put them in people's view, because I think the hardest thing is when the people who will take them out don't know they're there.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't your question about how to get things reassigned, though? Wasn't that part of your question?
Or pulling them into a separate section, pulling them out.
Yeah, because that's the other thing I was going to say that I always argue about why you should have an adult collection is because comics are written for adults, and that you're protecting the library by having a separate section that says these are actually intended for adults, not for teenagers. I spend a lot of time just being like, ooh, you had that in the teen collection. Someone had Habibi in their teen collection the other day. And she was like, oh, I haven't really looked at it. I was like, it's fantastic, but it does not belong in a teen collection. I was like, you might want to move that. And she was like, oh, okay, and she took it off the shelf right away. So, like, I was like, yeah. And again, it's mostly not malicious. It's just not quite understanding. But I think for adult part, that's a big part of just saying, again, it's being logical about who it's written for and who the content is for. Because one of the big things, I was going to ask you guys, and I don't know if we have time to get into this, but one of the things I think that causes the problem is the general cultural reaction to images. That people think that images are more vivid, more full of more impact. I personally actually don't think that's true. I think that prose and image can be just as dependent on your own imagination and how it will impact you. And especially in the world we live in now, there are so many images that people see kind of unwillingly that I think we've learned how to kind of deal with things we don't want to see. But I think that's something that I find is the big argument. That, well, oh, if I flip open a comic and see something, it's going to scar me for life. You know? And I'm just like, I don't know that that's true anymore, but that is one of the hardest things to argue against, is that cultural idea that somehow images are going to hurt people.
Well, images have more of a visceral punch. And, you know, a prose passage is only as filthy as your own mind.
Exactly.
And whereas, you know, an image is the image is the image. And one of the things about comics as opposed to other image-heavy media, such as DVDs of film that you're circulating, is that the reader controls the pace of time. So comics thrives on the power of the static image. And, you know, I'm sure most people in here, not a year goes by where somebody goes, why is it okay to have a comic with a naked blue dude just sitting out there in the open? You know, and that's the thing, is that, you know, you can flip to that visceral image without any other context, and you can just isolate it. And so will you be more scarred for life? That depends on how easily you scar. But will you notice, geez, there's a knife blade right there more than you would if it's, you know, sheathed in prose? Absolutely. And that's where, you know, explaining the context is so important. And by the context, I mean the entire medium as a visual language.
And I think that's also the point to compare to the fact that libraries collect visual media otherwise, that we collect television, we collect feature films. And I often point that out to people when you're trying to think about a comic and where I should put it. You know, as much as the rating system is kind of horrible, think about that. Think, is this an R-rated movie? Is this a PG-13 rated movie? Is this a PG movie? Where would I put it in the collection if it were a movie? And that way I can feel like at least I'm judging along the same standards as the rest of the library. And then I can say, well, you know, we have Queer as Folk, therefore we can have this comic. So. Well, does anyone have questions? Yes, go ahead.
I'm an English and visual art teacher. Our school's actually pretty good. We actually make kids read Understanding Comics.
Great.
And use it to analyze mouse. And I was actually set to ask how to cite MLA for mouse. But that's not my question. I think I'll figure that out somehow. My personal task is I'm also the media teacher. And I was asked to pick. We have suddenly a lot of money. And then I have to pick a comic to put into my comic. Into my media class, and make kids read it. I've been trying to do that for many years, so suddenly that was a wonderful, wonderful moment of my life. But what I found was a particular problem is that, it's actually related to what you said earlier, that the visual actually acts as a barrier. My ECL is really comic friendly, but when I recommended American Born Chinese, mm-hmm. she said she couldn't go for it. She said that she couldn't get over the racist portrayal of Chinese people. I have to point out to her I'm Chinese. and I got over it pretty well. But she's like, I just can't get over it. I couldn't read past that part. I said, no, but if you read that past that part, you'll know why it's like that. And it's wonderful. It's beautiful. I'm Chinese. I'm telling you. On behalf of the Chinese people. This is going to be fantastic. And she said, no. We had another issue where somebody saw somebody's butt. And that was really scandalous. And I couldn't deal with that because I also teach art, and we see butts and genitals all the time. But I was just, you know, the kids would be like, oh my god, boob. And I'm like, yes, you have one, I have one, your mom has one, everybody has one, let's move on. So I have to pick a comic, and or a novel, or whatever, it doesn't matter, I don't care what it's called. But my concern is always defending it. Is that, sure. That's actually what it is. Mm-hmm. If I say to my ACL, trust me on this, and I think I have enough cachet at this point, let's buy American Born Chinese. I wouldn't be surprised if many years later I have a parent calling in and saying, I can't believe you have this racist junk there, mm-hmm. and then be surprised to meet me and I'm Chinese. But they'll still go for it because they're in this deep right now and they'll go all the way. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's any kind of, I would appreciate not defending it alone, because if I can't even convince my ACL who's comic friendly that a racist portrayal of Chinese people is not so bad, and I'm Chinese, my wallet is kind of dry right now.
Well, specifically to American Born Chinese, Gene himself has spoken very eloquently about why he wrote it that way, what he was talking about.
The history,
so
based
the history
on
of what he, yeah, the, yeah. But the cartoon history.
It won the prince.
It won the prince.
It was nominated for National Book Award.
I thought that was the most perfect kind of, like,
yeah, that's like the most shoo-in comic.
But the thing is, it is the most shoo-in, but that is the objection I hear the most. Is the teacher's like, oh, no, we can't teach that, it has racist stereotypes. It's much like people told me that we couldn't, you know, teach Fahrenheit 451 because it's about book burning.
Well, I do think that going in there ready for the second thing you, like the first or the second thing you say being, this is a story that is engaging with racism, and like starting there so that they can't say, but it's racist because you've already said it, and you've already said that this is not about, you know, it is about portraying, you know, racism that some of the kids in your class are probably dealing with, and then talking about it and talking about the way you internalize that and talking about the way that other kids deal with it and really, really engaging with it in an intelligent way at a level that they can understand and sort of treating that as your jumping off point because you know it's going to be a problem, so just go in there like
and
sort
then
of
you
swing.
Start with the author.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You should talk to Gene.
I might also suggest, too, saying that, well, it's good that it's in class because then you can actually teach it, whereas they might not understand outside of class. Like, you're actually there, you can explain why this is that.
And I mean, if you want more suggestions, we can obviously come up with more suggestions at some point. But I'm going to let people ask more questions, but we can always discuss. You and then
you. I was just wondering, working with teens and kids as a librarian, I find that I get a lot of that gut reaction of, this is a comic book, these are pictures, it shouldn't be dealing with material this heavy, or this complicated, or this mature, and even when it's clearly a book for a teenager, like, this works, it just makes sense. How do you respond to that without, I find myself kind of stuck, because my first instinct is obviously say, like, you're wrong. That's not going to fly. And also, I don't know how to articulate that you may find this inappropriate, but it is a valid way to speak to kids about something they need to learn.
When you're saying you, is it parents and teachers and adults that are doing this?
Yeah, parents and occasionally a fellow librarian, that sort of thing.
Are they stuck on the word comic?
I think it's the visual nature of it, like you were saying. It's the fact that it's a visual thing. Like, I know this isn't where I'm at, but London Public Library, the teen librarian there told me that when she introduced a bunch of manga, someone in cataloging was scandalized because there was a panty shot. And it's like some comedy for teenagers, but there's a panty shot in it, and oh my god, there is a teen girls' underwear on this page. They can stare at that for hours.
but teens don't wear underwear anymore.
Well, and this sounds really glib, but actually one of the ways I've gotten around that a lot of times is I'll ask them, how old were you when you read Judy Blume's Forever?
Yeah.
And
most of them, many of the people who read them when they were, I was in eighth grade, because that's when I had questions about those things.
And
that's when I was too embarrassed to ask my mom. Yeah. And that's when I didn't want to talk about it with my friends. God, you know, I mean, you can only imagine the poor kid in class who was named Ralph that we were all like, but that, I mean, a lot of times they'll be like, oh, right. That is when.
I think that's very true, that a lot of people honestly just forget what it is to be a teenager.
Yeah.
And I think...
And when this stuff happens.
Yeah. And I will say that's, again, when we're talking about challenges in that sort of way of trying to convince people that this is a good idea, I almost never hear it from the teens themselves. I hear it from adults. And thankfully, I will say that my teens are growing up in this world and expect it to continue. Much in the way that, like, in the 60s we had superhero comics and then, like, all those people grew up and still wanted more superhero comics. Now we've got kids who want everything, and I think we'll continue the industry and continue to create. Most of them are becoming creators in a really kind of fabulous way.
And real briefly, what's additionally advantageous about comics, particularly manga, is that it's a safe place that is specifically designed oftentimes for the age group. And it is specifically designed for the issues that they're dealing with. Manga way more than Western comics. And so, you know, versus if it's a Judy Blume kind of question, you know, if you're 14 and you're exploring these emotional aspects of your reality, comics from your library is a whole hell of a lot safer than going on the internet. Yeah. And it's, you know, and so, and it's a lot of times designed to speak to what's happening in their inner life right then.
Yeah.
And one thing I will say that I often bring up about the whole panty shot thing is I actually refer people back to British humor. Because the British love naked butts. They think naked butts are like hilarious and throw them into everything. And you're just like, so I'm like, it's really no different. It's a culturally defined sense of humor. We all have different senses of humor that we think are funny. The Japanese think panty shots are hilarious.
Exactly. And the British think Benny Hill is hilarious.
Exactly. So you just have to be like, remember, there's different senses of humor. If you think that's inappropriate for a kid, fine. You know, that's okay. Talk to them about it. But, you know, on the other hand, it exists because it's considered funny. And the other thing about that, of course, is it's actually the embarrassment that's funny, not so much the panty shot. Anyway, that's more, I guess. Yeah, extra. Go ahead. Oh, did you have a question, though? Sorry, I don't want to
say anything. I did. I have one comment for you. We've been teaching to American-born Chinese to grade 7 for about 2 years now. So not a single complaint. It's been fantastic. So it's good. Now, the second one is I'm in middle school, 6, 7, and 8, and we walk a fine line. I've got kids who are 14, and they want Walking Dead. and such things like that, and that fine line where I'm trying to say to them, I want you guys reading them, you're watching the TV show and all the rest of it, and playing that fine line with the parents who have the little grade sixes, and I've tried to create a grade 8 only section, but I can't police it 24/7.
I mean, is that, I tend to be like, that's when the public library should partner and step in.
Well, and that was a good idea. That is a good idea. I have one little guy who's selling, like, he bought the entire collection and he's renting them out for $2.
So that they realize, and I do it with kids as young as my kindergartens, and we talk about, you know, they, it,
the five-finger test, so if it's too hard or too easy, depends on your purpose. And, you know, your three warning light test, it's sort of like, well, but you know what? Violence, bad words, and things that make you say ew, that depends on the individual. Mm-hmm. So a but may make me say ew, but might be fine for you. Mm-hmm. And developing that inner sense, I think, will help us a lot with then dealing with some of those challenges, because it might be fine for you, and you're doing a great job with it. Because, as you said, Robin, you know, do you want the 12-year-old? You might be fine, but do you want the 12-year-old? And then if there is a challenge, and I can't have it at all, that's a great suggestion you made, Robin, about pairing with the public library.
I actually had a 14-year-old come and tell me that Bone didn't belong in the children's department, because in volume one, there, you know, you can see his naked butt. There, he and what's her name? Thorn, yes, are in the stream together, mm-hmm, and he just thought that was obscene. And I said, no, you realize that Bone isn't actually human. And it didn't matter. No. I'm like,
still a butt.
Yeah, still a boy, still a butt. And I was like, still going to be in the children's.
I know we're officially at the end time, but if people want to hang out and ask questions, we can keep going. But just so you know, there's coffee break. I presume starting now. But yes, go ahead.
I'm in a high school library, and we're in farm country. And we have a big population of, anyone, Dutch Christian fundamentalists. Mm-hmm. And arguing graphic novels, mm-hmm, sometimes with people, is like arguing against a creationist. Mm-hmm. There is no winning, so you move on. And like Diane said, when there are people that do pick something up and object, because parents don't object, and we're a really big high school, and yet to have a parent object. But I've had a student object, and I say to them, hey, you picked it up. Did you read the back? Did you read what it's about? It's your choice. You make, mm-hmm, your own decision. Mm-hmm. And if you don't like it, then put it back, but don't come back to me.
I feel in a lot of ways like we're getting to the point where comics are just another part of the collection. And we're facing the challenges like we face challenges in everything. I mean, high schools are obviously different, or schools, mm-hmm, but like public libraries, like everything belongs in the public library anymore, right? Like, whenever anything's challenged in the public library, there's almost no reason to pitch it out. Like, that's the dirty secret we don't tell people, right? We don't just tell them, we're just going to laugh you off, but we're going to do it very officially. we can really have anything here. And so, I think those of you in school libraries are facing very interesting, like, kind of cultural, very micro-cultural challenges in terms of where you are, the people, like, your community too, right? Even the public library, probably it's a little bit different. But anything in the adult collection, like, I feel like the adult collection is like this catch-all, where you can put anything anymore. And like no reasonable library would ever throw anything out because of a challenge, right?
Well, I always say, I tell this to all my librarian friends anyway, and my friends in general, that every library should have a sign that says, if you can't find something that offends you, please see a librarian. Because that's the whole point of the whole collection. And I think we get more challenges of other types of books than I've ever had of graphic novels myself. I think they get reported more because people are noticing the format, and they get more publicity when they're challenged. But I think, to me at least, I still think the focus on most official book challenges tends to be on someone thinks it's inappropriate for the age range, so it's always children's, mm-hmm, books and teen books, and they tend to be in schools, and there can be graphic novels, but I still don't think I think there's a misperception that they are somehow challenged way more than other things, and I actually don't think that's true at this point. I do think they get more news, and we notice it more when it happens. But obviously there's things like the Persepolis challenge that just happened in the Chicago public schools, like that, or whatever that was. That was a weird little anyway, were there any more questions?
Go ahead. I was just wondering, when you talk about people who won't read graphic novels, I mean, you know, if you hand them a book of Peanuts, I mean, they probably read Peanuts, mm-hmm, you know, or Calvin and Hobbes, or a New Yorker cartoon. I mean, do any of you use the humorous approach to lure them in?
And I think with them, I actually met my first kid the other day who had never heard of Calvin and Hobbes. It made me very sad. I was like, no! But then I was like, well, you should read it.
There's a three ball answer.
But
that can be a really good way to bring people in, because, you know, if you start with something that they do know, and then move a step or two beyond that.
Or nostalgically loved.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, that's even my dad, who grew up, he actually learned to read by reading comics in the 50s, and he kind of then forgot. He didn't think of them as something to read. But he's a physicist. So both of my parents were physicists, actually. So we read Feynman together and had a blast, because Feynman is like a household hero in my house. So we had a great time discussing that, and that was, he's now reading more and more graphic novels. I can kind of hand him something,
reject it outright. I got him to read Pluto because it's very old school sci-fi. And he was like, yeah. So.
Also awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I shouldn't have known that. Anyway. Sorry. Anything else?
Go ahead. I'm just going to add one more form of advocacy is to consider the artistic value. You know, point out that there are a lot of people who can't read comics because of the word picture connect, but there's a lot of people who don't read because they prefer, you know,
images.
They watch the images, right? So at bookstores, we used to always ask what people watched,
yes.
what other films they
yes.
watched, and
yes.
recommend it that way based on
yep.
that route instead. So, and that would, I think, be really helpful for media classes as well, just considering the artistic, you know.
Yeah, that's usually my first step when I'm doing Reader's Advisory 14, especially
mm-hmm.
as I say, well, what games do you play? What movies do you like? What TV do you watch? What books do you like? Because especially there are certain teens that, like, the last book they remember is, like, Hatchet. You know, and they're like, well, I liked Hatchet. And you're like, when did you read that? And then you're like, okay, I need more than that.
Go ahead.
I'm an English teacher, not a librarian. And we've had...
It's all right, you can stay.
We've had a lot of success putting in class sets of graphic novels, and our librarian is really on board. She actually was supposed to be here today, but wasn't able to be here. But one of the last wall that we can't seem to climb is with the academic kids and the reading lists for the academic kids. So we have two independent study units in grade 11, one grade 11, one grade 12. And we can't seem to crack it in terms of putting a graphic novel on. So we have History of Violence on once because the grade 11s is like a book movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the criticism was always the weaker readers gravitate for the graphic novel and they do a crap job. Well, without the graphic novels, they just read a Nicholas Sparks book and do a crap job.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the For You is Dystopia, and that's, you know, there's so many graphic novels that could easily slide into that. And I just don't know how to scale that particular wall. Because there's this, even though it's like it's okay for some things, but it's seen as kind of like this, you can't put this on the list with the serious books.
Do you have a response to that?
Put bought first 15 Walking Dead graphic novels for my library, not really knowing what they were. Had to use up a money ball fast before they took it back. And once I saw that maybe they weren't probably great, gave them to the English department, and now they do a zombie unit. Video everything with their 3 years and 4 years in the dystopian part of the curriculum.
I think that's always the question to look for is the literary side of the comics.
Yeah.
And that's it's
I
to me I wouldn't actually
with class sets, but I think they have a problem when they put it alongside regular books
mm-hmm.
and kind of trying to see those as being kind of like
Have you used the so-called classics? Have you used Mouse? Have you used Persepolis? Have you used Jimmy Corrigan?
I don't think they're aware of those books.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's what
yeah.
I mean.
Well, that's
the ones
yeah.
that are
I mean,
scary.
I feel like V for Vendetta and The Watch would be classic choices for a dystopian unit.
Yeah.
Just a classic is yes
mm-hmm.
for
yeah.
Animal Farm.
And my high school has it almost every year. Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's Utopian. And what's the other topic?
The other one's Book of the Week.
Book of the Week.
Yeah.
Well, you're the new one today.
I mean, yeah. Sorry. Maybe you do have to start with one of the sort of more serious classics, though,
yeah.
something that can't be construed as science fiction or superhero at
yeah.
all, you know, and use that as kind of the wedge to get in there.
Or you could go to, like, Gareth Hines, like, The Odyssey, or, like, his
yeah.
book, like one of these things that really is a different approach. Like, they can read the text, and then they can read the graphic novel, and they can see the movie if that's
yeah.
appropriate, you know,
yeah.
and they're beautiful, and they look quite different than
yeah.
the superhero.
This
you know.
Is the problem that we're having, and why I have another question is like, it's like we're okay with them for the younger grades and we do a great job with them and the younger kids really benefit. But then as soon as we get to the academics, there's a sort of hands-off approach and it's like they have to read real books.
Could you run a book club with the actual teachers? And
yeah.
be like, you know, you need to read these five adult graphic novels that are literary so that you
yeah.
understand what value they have.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I think, the hardest thing is to get people on board with them themselves more than, and then they can figure out how to teach them. Sorry, we only have a few more minutes, so you and
I just actually have, we actually have the opposite problem because we teach understanding comics and mouse to our international baccalaureate program.
Mm-hmm.
And that, yeah, so.
Where's
that?
My school.
Yeah, what we had a problem was that with mouse is that we couldn't actually give it to our applied level kids because they couldn't understand the influence between the panels. They didn't understand suddenly why there's something in Germany. Right, or like why everybody's wearing a mouse, right? Or why the mouse is suddenly a mask, right? So it's kind of interesting. We have no problem with our academic kids. It's the applied kids actually that we have a problem.
I'm totally taking that back because we're just starting the EIB, and so we're going from already they will probably have graphic novels in the academic. to, we're talking to schools that are like, oh, I do this lecture all day.
The International Blackbird Program also has a very strict list of books that, that you can use. Like, you can't just use anything you want.
Yeah.
And so graphic novel Maus and Syphilis is actually on it.
Excellent.
So, I was just going to say, as a fellow high school English teacher, I picked up the Teen Boat, that new one that came out.
Teen Boat?
Yeah. And then we thought of Hamlet. Like
yes.
Hamlet, right away.
Yeah.
And you can get that kind of,
Yeah, we have Teen Boat in the library.
Oh, do you?
We do. We don't teach Hamlet.
Oh, you don't?
Wow.
Not everybody taught Hamlet.
No, I'll teach Macbeth until the day I die. Like, they'll be lowering me in and I'll avoid stuff.
All right, well, I think we do have to wrap up. Thank you, everybody on the panel. Thank